Innovation Rockstars. Innovation Rockstars.
In this episode, we welcome Nicholas McQuire, Director of Growth Innovation and Strategy, Strategic Missions and Technologies at Microsoft.
Hi, and welcome back to Innovation Rockstars. My name is Chris Müroth, and in this episode, I am thrilled to welcome Nick McQuire. So Nick is a globally recognized thought leader and a former 20-plus years technology analyst with a passion for, as I learned, artificial intelligence, emerging tech, and enterprise innovation. So now that's a perfect fit for Innovation Rockstars, right? And I learned he's also named top technology analyst in the world in, I guess, 2019 and 2020 by the Institute of Industry Analyst Relations. He is also a startup advisor, board member, member of the CIO 100 and next CIO judging panels. Wow, Nick, that's quite a track record and a perfect match. And Nick, thanks so much for joining us. It's great to have you on the show.
Oh, pleasure to be here, Chris. Thanks for having me and Microsoft on it.
All right. And as always, we start straight away with a short 60 seconds introduction sprint. Now, this is all about you, Nick, your career and your current role at Microsoft. And I do have a digital stopwatch here. So I'd say for the next 60 seconds, the stage is all yours. Nick, let's go.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Nick McQuire. I work in Microsoft's Strategic Missions and Technologies Division, or SMT, as we refer to it. This is our business incubation and scale-up arm within Microsoft. It was set up as early as November of last year. It's designed to sit at the nexus between and connecting to our long-term research in Microsoft Research on one hand and our current solution portfolio on the other. Our role and our goal is to help build and accelerate and scale the next generation of 10 billion plus businesses within Microsoft. So we're focused on four areas at the moment that we think are shaping the future of cloud, telecoms, and 5G, space, quantum computing, and solutions for the federal government. Obviously, as you highlighted earlier, I'm a longstanding CIO advisor, and I currently have a side hustle as a judge on the CIO 100 here in the UK, which recognizes the most transformational CIOs here in the UK each year. So lots going on.
A lot to do, and congratulations to that. And I'd say, Nick, to get to know you a little more, what I would like to do is I give you three sentence starters, and you please complete those sentences. Let's see, this is oftentimes really interesting. So the first sentence starter goes like this: I do spend a silly amount of money on.
Ooh, I would say beer.
Beer.
I'm a craft beer. I love craft beer. I love my IPAs all over the world. And they're expensive.
But it's
a guilty pleasure.
And they are. What's your favorite? Any favorite?
I like a brand called Daya here. Mm-hmm. It's manufactured here in the UK. It's gorgeous. Lovely IPA.
All right. We'll need to try that. All right. Great. Number two, Nick, if I created my own real world MBA program, it probably would be...
I would say a program that would have a focus, quite a large focus on communications and storytelling, I think, as a key component. For me, the neuroscience of storytelling, what happens chemically in our brains when we hear a good story is fascinating. It's super complex as well, but it's becoming more and more important in business. How do you convey a message? The art of good comms and storytelling is also being shaped by technology. So it's becoming more complex, more immersive. So lots going on there. I think that would be a key thing if I was to do an MBA program around it.
Yeah, maybe one of the most powerful things you can work on. All right, and finally, number three. In the last 5 years, this new belief or behavior or habit that has improved my life the most is...
Oh, this is probably going to sound really boring, but it's the habit of running. I have been a runner for quite a long time, actually, but for me, it's not just about sport. It's also, it has such a positive impact on a lot of things, creativity, well-being, my health. I'm a type 1 diabetic, so it's actually fundamental in terms of keep making me survive, really. But I guess coming back to the beer thing, It probably helps me justify drinking beer as well.
So it's somewhat, you know, beer and running. Well, that's actually a fair combination. Fair enough. All right.
Quite a weird one. But yes, a necessary one in my case.
All right. That's great. Now, let's start exploring how Microsoft innovates. And this is maybe one of the broadest questions I actually could ask you, right? But, you know, what is, in your terms, what is Microsoft's vision for innovation? And I know that's a broad one.
Yeah, it's a broad one, but it's a really important question. You know, Satya Nadella, our CEO, talks a lot about, you know, how you establish longevity in business is about either reinventing yourself or inventing the future. So the process of this continuous innovation piece is really important to how we look at our vision for innovation. And it really, I guess, breaks down into kind of three key pillars, if you like. You know, first, we talk a lot about how innovation has to be meaningful in that it has to be available for our customers to access and to innovate on for their purposes and their own unique needs. You know, we have a core belief that, you know, breakthrough innovations aren't necessarily going to come from the technology providers, right? Every company, you know, in every industry has the capacity to innovate. So I'd say that first piece around meaningful is key. The second one is very much around applicability. So innovation has to be applicable. It has to be put into action and made real. And then the third one that's becoming really important with ourselves and our customers, and we talk a lot about this, is that we believe innovation also has to be responsible in ways that ultimately earn trust. So it's not just about what technology can do to support innovation in our case, but also what it should do as well. So I think it's these kind of three pillars, if you like, meaningful, applied, and responsible, that really kind of make up the core kind of belief system in terms of how we vision our innovation strategy overall.
Yeah, so that's actually also a comprehensive value system, right? If you say those three, those three key pillars, if you want to make up the vision, also the long-term vision, obviously, for innovation. Now, you know, you have that, and then obviously, you know, Microsoft being as maybe one of the highest valued organizations across the globe in terms of market cap and many more, aspects to that. How is it even, you know, possible to spark and cultivate and culture that embraces and also, you know, constantly emphasizes continuous innovation?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one across the business that's thought long and hard about. You know, and as a company of nearly 180,000 employees, you know, we definitely are not immune to the cultural challenges of innovating at scale, right? Like, it's not easy, and we don't have all the answers by any stretch of the imagination. But I think, really, to answer that, I think it kind of breaks into kind of three key areas. I think the first for companies is to have that company-wide vision for innovation that I just highlighted in our case. You know, embedding it top-down, bottom-up, left-to-right across the organization is a really important starting point on the culture. I think then how you organize to execute that vision is also key from a process perspective, which, you know, obviously impacts culture as well. You know, there's many examples, you know, and I'm fairly new to Microsoft, and I'm always blown away by the examples in terms of, you know, on the organizational side within Microsoft that kind of help facilitate this. But I would highlight specifically, you know, our regular approach to hackathons, which I think is a good example of this organizational piece. You know, we do, as a business, we go through these at least four times a year. There's dedicated kind of time, space, and resource to focus on innovation across the business, particularly in the engineering side. So the idea is that, you know, a week each semester, you know, the teams can go away and they can think about, you know, trying to fix anything that's broken. They can hack together a new product idea, for example, or they can just go and learn something new that's interesting that can improve things. So, you know, I think that organizational piece is probably the second area that's really key. And I think thirdly, and this is a big topic, but it's about what we call innovation mindset. So a key to kind of having an innovation mindset is about the culture around what we call growth mindset. And growth mindset is a fundamental aspect of the Microsoft culture, where we elevate learning and kind of learn it all kind of culture above everything that we do, as opposed to kind of a know-it-all culture, if you like. And, you know, we walk the walk as well as talk the talk on this. So, for example, you know, growth mindset principles are embedded into dimensions of our reward systems each year, mm-hmm. for example, for every employee. You know, recently from a team perspective, our team, you know, we had an offsite, and one of the key areas on the agenda was to invite an external speaker. We had Jia Zhang, who's a well-known YouTube influencer and author of a book called Rejection Proof. Mm-hmm. And he came in to present to us, you know, a YouTube series that he created called 100 Days of Rejection. And it was basically about the art of dealing with rejection. So in our view, kind of growth mindset and kind of the ability to deal with rejection kind of go hand in hand, because it creates that psychological safety, if you like, that removes some of the barriers and helps kind of create this culture, you know, where invention really can flourish, right? So we don't have all the answers here, but these are some of the kind of examples that I've observed that are fundamental to how we kind of integrate into that culture. You know, the vision top down, the organizational side, and of course the growth mindset are all key elements of that.
Right. And I think this is particularly, you know, important because, you know, there is, of course, a difference in when it comes to speed of change, speed of technology, technological change as per industry. Right. So it might be, you know, specifically in the case of Microsoft being, you know, in, of course, so many businesses at the same time, but of course, being rooted, you know, in technology, in software and everything around that, cloud, SaaS, and also collaboration. Obviously, you guys are certainly, you know, more exposed to, you know, accelerating technological change than maybe, you know, some chemical industries, for example, right? So obviously, you know, there is a difference in how you might want to approach and cultivate an innovation culture over time. I think about continuous thing, have all these, sure, these formats as hackathon and stuff. Now, but when we dive, you know, deeper into what you're actually doing in innovation. So you could, for example, apply the Horizon model, right? And again, there are so many models that try to describe and catch the complexity of how innovation works in organizations and across organizations. But if we would take the Horizon model, you know, H1 to H3, and in what dimensions does Microsoft think? And do you have some examples there for each Horizon?
Yeah. So let me paint it out for you, because I think it's a really important question. And we get a lot of questions on this from our customers. It's one mm-hmm. of the very important customer workshop topics around how we look at innovation and the Horizon principles kind of attached to that very closely. So obviously, for those of you that are not that familiar, you know, we apply McKinsey's Horizon framework to our approach to innovation. We operate a balance of both visionary and practical projects, you know, across the horizons, across Microsoft. You know, we call this as an approach, you know, full spectrum innovation, mm-hmm. Which is key to how we think about creating kind of innovation as a platform, if you like, within the company, which allows us to have kind of a centralized approach as well as, you know, a distributed model inside the organization. So, you know, if we think about it, we break it down. Horizon one is very much about proving the existing business, you know, the existing portfolio today. Shorter term time scales there. Horizon two tends to be about, you know, improving the existing business, but evolving it, you know, in the context of, say, new business models, for example, mm-hmm. you know, 3 to, you know, 5 year type of horizons out in terms of time scales. And horizon three tends to be, you know, longer term, you know, 5 year plus, you know, and they tend to be about moonshots, right? So, yeah. you know, game changing areas that have the potential to open up entirely new markets and categories. They also have the potential to not manifest into anything material as well. But the opportunity there is such that it's worth the risk and the drive to do it. So, you know, we have thousands of projects and examples across Microsoft that, you know, manifest across these horizons. I think the one important point that I would stress is that we approach the horizons not in isolation. So it's mm-hmm. really important mm-hmm. to have connections between the horizons. So a good example of this is kind of how we approach, you know, our large scale transformer natural language AI models mm-hmm. and our supercomputing resources that support those solutions in Microsoft. So for example, you know, these are largely coming out of Microsoft Research at the moment, but you can think of, say, our Turing family of AI models, or the work that we do with OpenAI in the context of GPT-3. More recently, actually, at Build this year, we announced Megatron, you know, a 530 billion parameter natural language transformer model. So these models are escalating massively. But the important point is that we see this innovation manifested across the horizon. So, for example, you know, these solutions, what we call AI at scale altogether, mm-hmm. you know, manifests itself in products from Bing to Office. Mm-hmm. We can see features in PowerPoint that these massive machine learning models are powering. GitHub, we've made announcements recently there as well. So that's in the horizon one sense, but they also are now increasingly becoming available as platforms in their own right, in a horizon two sense, for some customers to build on and to customize for their own unique needs. Novartis is a great example here. We're working with them. They're using our AI at scale, these natural language models, as a business platform to speed up some of their research and discovery process for their new drug business. You know, that's horizon two, but then we also have, you know, we're starting to see AI at scale and these natural language models start to facilitate a new paradigm of computing in a horizon three sense as well. And as we start to look to combine, you know, these large scale AI models with quantum computing in the future, for example, you know, we're going to have a real uplift in terms of how we can solve really tough challenges in areas like molecular dynamics, for example. So it's important to understand that, you know, some of our kind of incubation, some of our research areas are spanning these horizons as well. So it's not just the horizons themselves, but it's the connectivity and integration between them that's just as important in terms of how we see innovation as well.
Yeah, and talking about those technologies and also, you know, the interaction of technologies, you know, the way we see things is that a lot of technologies are, you know, increasingly intersecting, as you mentioned before, right? So especially, of course, when you apply them in real world scenarios, right? So, you know, AI is a good example. Take AI and 5G or 5G and, you know, its applications in space, right? And there are many more examples. So what is your opinion on this? Is this happening? Are we maybe even observing, you know, technology convergence for some of those technology you guys are working on? And if that holds true, how do you, you know, possibly, given Microsoft is such a large organization and a global organization, how do you guys expand across silos and actually co-innovate?
Yeah, it's a great question, and we absolutely see the convergence of a number of key technologies being a critical aspect to how we think about innovation in the future, which ultimately come together around how we think about the future of cloud. Satya talks a lot today about today's innovations that are enabled by the intelligent cloud and the intelligent edge, you know, which focus around three major tech shifts, you know, ubiquitous computing and a progression towards edge computing, AI and the progression there, and of course, how we see kind of the inner experiences between humans and machines evolving from an immersive experience perspective. So those are three elements of a key paradigm in terms of the technology shifts that are happening today. Now, tomorrow, however, we're going to start to see disruptions shaping the future of cloud and our future as well that are going to involve a lot more of the intersection of these technology areas. And we'll actually, I think, evolve this kind of paradigm that Satya talks about pretty significantly. So, for example, and I think you touched on this, you know, our notion of ubiquitous computing is going to be expanded by 5G and space technologies. And that's going to create a new paradigm for applications. It's going to bring compute closer to the problems that businesses are going to need to solve. And that's just one element. You know, when you think about AI, and I talked earlier about the convergence between AI and quantum at scale,
right.
We're going to start to see a lot more precision around the problem solving in the context of improving on what classical computers can do today. And then lastly, you know, a key aspect to how we see the future of immersive experience is around how humans and machines will co-reason together and to solve problems that are fundamentally underpinned by a lot of these disruptions, but it's going to transform a lot in terms of how humans and machines are going to interact in the future. So this vision is very much you know, a facet of new technologies, 5G, space, quantum computing. So to your question, you know, how do we realize it across these, if you like, in some respects, siloed technology areas? So one way that we're starting to see this manifest is by focusing on some of the new categories and some of the new customer scenarios that these disruptions now are starting to facilitate today. So incubating these scenarios in many ways can act as a forcing function in terms of bringing down some of these existing silos. So a good example of this, you know, we announced some really interesting Horizon 2 work with Ferrovial this year at Build. It featured in Satya's keynote. It was all about smart highways of the future. And the project, you know, it's going to materialize over the next couple of years. But it spans a truly remarkable number of domains within Microsoft: AI, edge computing, as well as Horizon. So Horizon 2 technologies like private 5G networks and space technologies as well. So in order for us to be successful with Ferrovial, we had to start to remove some of the existing processes around these technologies from the beginning. So in some ways, we think, you know, some of these incubation Horizon 2 projects can really help establish kind of the new processes for intersecting technologies and can really, as I said earlier, act as a forcing function to really kickstart that process of bringing down some of the inhibiting silos that may occur when you're starting to think about some of these new future projects.
Naturally, of course, right? And I would love to learn more about, you know, your role and your area of responsibility, in that. But before we do that, Nick, what I actually would love to do too is to play a quick game with you. And the game is called Either Or, and this is how it works, really simple. I will want to give you two options, option A or option B. You choose one of those options and then spend maybe one sentence, you know, each to briefly explain your choice. So that's going to be interesting. All right, let's see. Number one, Nick, as a starter, that's an easy one. Do you prefer working in a home office or in a real office, and why?
Oh, what a question. You can't say both. That's a cop-out. No. I think working in a home office, although I need both.
Yeah, the reason
for that, I think, is our work involves quite a lot of collaboration globally. Can't happen face-to-face. It also involves quite a lot of thinking time as well. So that downtime, and I can organize my diary around that, is much easier at home.
Right. And talking about, you know, tearing down silos, obviously you would need to be, you know, at many different locations in the world at the same time, not possible. So, you know, connecting virtually and digitally is just, you know, one way to do that. And then you can do this in the home office as well. Sure.
All right.
The great one. Okay. Okay. Number two, Nick, in the future, in the, let's say H2 future, right? So not too far out, but H2. Do you see artificial intelligence either as a friend or as a foe? And why?
Friend.
Yeah.
I think it will be a remarkable tool for not just technologists, business professionals. We're starting to see it as a tool in our everyday lives. Obviously, there are risks with that. But the kind of uncharted territory that we're in at the moment is it being a real, truly business decision-making tool, support tool, and creativity support tool. You know, there's many use cases we're seeing where it can really, really add value to your everyday work environment. So for me, it's definitely that way.
Yeah, I love it. So no dystopian answers right now on AI. That's just about brilliant. Yeah, great. Okay, and finally, okay, you have to choose one. And you're asked right now, would you rather run a country or a business?
Ooh, what an interesting question. I would rather run a business.
Uh-huh.
I think even though the uncertainty is tremendously high, I think the forces of progression around technology can be harnessed, I think, to really from some good advantage. I think there's a lot less volatility there than it would be running countries at this current moment of time. So I would go with a business.
Interesting. All right. That's fair. All right. Now let's get back and thanks for the answers. And let's talk about your, Nick, your area of responsibility, you know, in growth, innovation and strategy, strategic missions, technologies and so on. Can you talk about that? What is your area of responsibility? And also, what is not?
Yeah, sure. So maybe first our function within SMT. So I talked about SMT being our incubation and scale up arm within Microsoft, growth, innovation, and strategy division within our organization. Our organization within Microsoft is about, I think, 3,000 to 6,000 employees, but our team much smaller than that. We're a centralized function, and our unit is designed to help and support the business units within strategic missions and technologies to help incubate and accelerate the creation of these new business categories and these next, what we believe are the next $10 billion businesses for Microsoft. So we focus a lot on business acceleration, and the notion of business acceleration is an entirely different kettle of fish around new business than it is around the well-oiled engine within Microsoft that focuses on growing our existing businesses. So this new business creation is a real real focal point of our business and our function, but it's obviously a completely different process than what we see within Microsoft, within the core business. So we have a team of experts, in incubation, strategy and planning, thought leadership, product development, customer engagement, that really work with the units around a lot of these Horizon 2 scenarios, but also just supporting these core businesses, quantum computing, telecoms and 5G, space and also US federal government, to help accelerate them into that potential. So my role specifically within that covers a number of different areas of strategy and planning. But in the main, I focus a lot on thought leadership and customer engagement across all our strategic missions and technologies areas. So that involves, doing work with customers. It involves obviously building narratives and helping drive awareness of some of the work that we're doing, across our customer demographic overall. So hopefully that kind of breaks it down for you.
Yeah, it does. That is super interesting. And I was trying to, cheat a little bit prior to the recording today, and I tried to get a glimpse of, what's next. So you already, gave some great examples on what's next, H2, also H3. Well, what I did is I tried to visit, Microsoft.com, trying to understand that, right, the website. Yeah? So what I found was really interesting, but what I found is I saw this is mainly, directed to consumers, but at least I could read a lot about, Office and Windows, Xbox, MS Teams, Microsoft Cloud and Azure for sure. That's B2B. So my question would be also, given that you would want to create an MBA on storytelling and all that, really important topics around communication, how can you actually help customers understand what's next, right? So H2, H3 technologies, as the website per se is maybe more focused in communication towards H1.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. And we do have a number of ways in which we educate and engage customers on future products and future innovations. We have actually a dedicated page, innovation.microsoft.com, which is our main landing page for a lot of these inspirational stories and research projects coming out of MSR. And a lot of the new scenarios that we're working with customers around. And so that's one avenue. We also find that increasingly customers want to know more about not only in terms of how Microsoft kind of approaches innovation, but also some of the learnings from our customers as they apply AI at scale in their businesses, for example. So we also do a lot of engagement with customers through our AI Business School, which is a very valuable resource particularly for business decision makers that want to kind of come up to speed with kind of the innovations of the future, what they look like from an industry perspective, what are other customer scenarios and stories that they can learn from either in their industries or in other industries, et cetera. And I think we've walked well over a million business users through that program, hugely valuable source of content. But I guess our main way tends to be through working directly with our customers themselves. So we run a number of workshops throughout the year with customers, one-to-one, sometimes one-to-many, but mainly one-to-one, on these topics, including things like the future of cloud and Microsoft innovation, quantum, 5G, et cetera. So, if there is interest, feel free to reach out to me if interested, and we can obviously set these types of workshops up. So those don't often appear on the website, but they are a hugely important element in terms of how we engage customers on this topic.
Absolutely. This is super helpful. Now, when talking about, and also to do a little recap of what we have right now, right? So how to expand across silos, to co-innovate, the strategy, the vision, the culture, continuous innovation, the Horizon model by McKinsey and all that stuff. What would be, your kind of three key actionable recommendation, if you will, that listeners will take away from this episode with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think first is probably more kind of a statement around not losing sight of the fact that every organization has the capacity to foster innovation. It doesn't exist in a vacuum either, in the sense of it can come from anywhere in the organization. I think that point is so important. It's not, it's not just the tech providers that do this. You know, we see the level of innovation across our customer footprint is fantastic. And so I think for those customers that are maybe a bit skeptical as to what they can achieve compared to a big tech company, I think that point is really, really important to consider. I think secondly, I would go back to, you know, how you think about this, you know, creating a platform for innovation in your company. You know, think about having the vision, the organizational processes that support that vision and execute that vision, and kind of, you know, how you do, you know, that innovation mindset. So how do you instill a culture, possibly using growth mindset principles, which has been successful for us, but it may not be successful for everyone, to kind of address that culture. I think that's a really important piece as well. And then third, I guess, and finally, you know, start to plan today around some of these future technology disruptions that we've been talking about, you know, that are fundamentally shaping not only the future of the cloud, which is really how we see it, but also, you know, the business as a whole, not only just Microsoft's businesses, but industries as a whole. So I think they will impact your business. I think they are also really good launch pads to start, you know, kickstart some new innovation projects where you can apply some new learnings as well. And, you know, we have many more learnings from within Microsoft and our customers that we are able to share as well. So, you know, feel free to get in touch on that. But I would say those three things: the vision, you know, the notion that every organization can innovate, and then finally, you know, that planning around kickstarting, you know, action around some of these new technology disruptions today that are coming down the line.
Yeah, so that is very helpful advice. And Nick, before we, because we are quite far with that episode, but before we wrap up this episode, I do need to ask you, you know, when you look at the professional career so far, and it's been quite a while, what would you say, and I'm really interested to hear that, what would you say was your greatest innovation rockstar moment so far, Nick?
I don't know about rockstar, because I appreciate the level of, kind of contributions you've had on this channel. But for me, I guess there's two things really. One, I was very recently completed, you know, constantly learning. So as part of growth mindset and that learn it all culture, you know, we don't have all the answers, and I certainly don't have all the answers around innovation. I recently completed a fellowship on corporate innovation here in London, which is attached to the mayor's program for innovation in London, affiliated with the Royal College of Art and London Partners, which is a vehicle to accelerate growth in London. A great program. For me, that was a rockstar moment. I worked with a large number of our customers on that, but it was just a great platform to share ideas and get some experiences from other industries and companies around innovation. That was one. I think from Microsoft's perspective, though, I did actually have the opportunity just this year at Build to run a live demo of that Ferrovial Smart Highways of the Future.
That's cool.
Scenario that I talked about earlier. And that was a live demo at Build. It was very nerve-wracking. The team that we worked with on that, there was a bunch of people involved, but it was just phenomenal. So I think for me, that was probably the bigger achievement from a team perspective as well within Microsoft. So those two things.
Yeah, well, the latter one is quite huge, because I can tell how live demos typically work, right? There is always something you haven't thought of before. So congratulations for, you know, you and the team pulling this off. That's really amazing, actually. And
thank you.
Well, with that, I would say, you know, with that moment in mind, we wrap up this episode, Nick. It was a pleasure to talk to you about, kind of everything innovation, and specifically how Microsoft thinks and lives in these days. Thanks for being my guest. It has been a pleasure.
Chris, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Love what you guys are doing here. So hopefully see you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks. And to everybody listening or watching, if you like the show, then as always, leave us a rating or a review and share the podcast with whomever you deem this could be interesting. And if you want to get in touch, simply shoot us a message. The email address is, as always, info@innovationrockstars.show. Now that's it. Thanks for your time. See you in the next episode. Take care and bye-bye.
This was innovation rockstar Nicholas McQuire on how global player Microsoft innovates, how to overcome silos, and the changes that lay ahead in the field. If you would like to give us feedback on this episode, or know someone, perhaps yourself, who also has some thrilling stories or insights to share from the world of corporate innovation, just shoot us a note at info@innovationrockstars.show. You like the show? Then leave us a rating and recommend it to others. For more inspiring innovation stories, visit our website at www.innovationrockstars.show or browse through our Innovation Rockstars channel on all major podcast platforms.